Welcome to the Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast. Oh boy, do we have a treat for you today. Many of us know Phipps Conservatory as a gem in the Pittsburgh region. And a lot of us have been there many times in our lives for the beautiful flower shows, the art exhibits, the winter flower garden and light show, and all kinds of other things and events. But what most of us don't realize is that there's much more to Phipps than just pretty flowers and great art exhibits. Phipps is one of the leading innovators of green building. As a matter of fact, the Center for Sustainable Landscapes in 2012 was listed as one of the greenest, if not the greenest building in the world, and may actually still be there. So I've got a treat for you today. I sit down with Richard Piacentini, who is the CEO of Phipps. He has been there since 1994, when Phipps was turned over to the organization that now, or the nonprofit that now runs the facility for the city, and they have done an incredible job. The Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast, Season 1, Episode 10, starts now. First, Richard, thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's great to be here.
I think Phipps is considered by many to be a jewel in Pittsburgh. It's got a very, very long history. So I'd like to start with a little bit of the history of Phipps. I think you celebrated the 125th anniversary. Was that last year?
That was last year. That's right.
Okay. And there was a big celebration. Actually, I think Pittsburgh Beautiful was there. We had one of our writers down
there.
Yeah,
I think so.
Mm-hmm. So I find Phipps to be a fascinating place and a wonderful place. And, I think the history is very interesting. So if you want to give me a little insight into that, that would be great.
Sure. Phipps Conservatory opened in 1893. It was a gift to the city of Pittsburgh by Henry Phipps. And it was given at a time when the city was, there was a lot more pollution from steel making and other industries going on back then. And it was a place where people could get away to get some fresh air, see something beautiful. It was something that was really to, you know, connect people to nature and the beauty of nature. And the city of Pittsburgh ran it for 100 years through the Parks Department. And then in 1993, it was spun off to a nonprofit organization. So the nonprofit now runs Phipps for the city. Facility is still owned by the city, but it's run by a nonprofit organization. And we've been running it for 26 years now. And over that time, we've been very focused on trying to sort of reinvent some of the things that we're doing, make the conservatory more relevant for the 21st century. But all the while we're doing that, we still recognize that we are still, 126 years later, a place for people to come and see the beauty of nature and get away and just really get refreshed and reinvigorate the spirit. So even though a lot of the things that you might see us doing are different, our basic core essence is still the same.
So, I think Phipps is almost like an oasis.
Absolutely.
For a city like Pittsburgh, especially my father's mother was from Pittsburgh, and she grew up here in the 1920s and the 1930s. And when he would come back to visit, they would talk about when you would walk outside, you know, the smoke, if you had a white shirt on, it was gray.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. So even back then, to have something like this here was probably pretty special. How would you say Phipps compares to a site like Longwood Gardens, which is outside of Philadelphia in Kennett Square, which is well outside of Philadelphia. And that's an old DuPont estate, I think.
Right. Well, Phipps and Longwood and I think the conservatory in Chicago are three of the largest conservatories in the country. Phipps is one of the oldest conservatories. It's a lot older than either of those two. Phipps and Longwood are still really the only two major conservatories in the country that still do major changing flower shows. Mm-hmm. Phipps is not as big as Longwood. We don't have the DuPont endowment.
Right.
So there's that part of it. But we still, I mean, the things that we do here at Phipps are just, you just can't see anywhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm. And the winter flower show, the light garden and the flower show, how long has that been going on here?
Well, the winter flower show has been going on for many, many years, I think since the 70s. Mm-hmm. And the light portion of it is probably only about 5 or 6 years old right now. And that's really had a tremendous impact on the popularity of that show. I mean, the show is five times as big as it used to be ever since we did the lights.
Yeah.
And all the lights are LED, by the way, and they're all powered by renewable energy.
Yeah.
And make sure I get that in.
Yeah. And we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. I think that that's probably one of the most popular events, if you will, in Pittsburgh.
It's clear. I think it is. And it's clearly our most popular show now.
Yeah. And if you think about the way younger people are today, especially children, high school age, and all of the distractions that they have in life with the internet and, you know, computers and cell phones and all that stuff. I think that a place like Phipps is really special because when I was younger, when you were younger, these were things that they were kind of part of what you did. You know, if you wanted to go see a show, you would go see a show downtown. If you wanted to go to Phipps and you wanted to see some nature in the city or there was a special flower exhibit, it was kind of part of what you did and you accepted it. The younger generation, I think this is something that really helps to connect you to being human when we have so many distractions that are almost inhuman.
That's so true.
And I've brought my children down to the show a few times and it's incredible to see the looks on their faces that, wow, this stuff exists. You know, it's pretty, it's beautiful. It's not, you know, generated with a program or an algorithm. It's something you can see and enjoy.
Right. So. And you know what I think is key to that too, is you said it earlier in the interview that, you know, your mother's parents came here in the 20s and, you know, I'm not from Pittsburgh originally, but I can't tell you how many people I've met that tell me, oh yeah, I remember my parents came here, their grandparents, their parents came here, their parents' parents came here. I mean, this goes on five or six generations of Pittsburghers have been coming here. And generally people, you know, would be brought here with their families when they're very young. And it just starts to create this bond, you know, that this is a place they went to when they were 4, 5, 6 years old. That's still happening today. We still have families coming here with little kids. The little kids love it. And I think you're seeing that same thing now, that now these kids are getting older. They still have those fond memories of coming here, you know, with their parents or guardians when they were a lot younger.
Yeah. And it also reaches far beyond Pittsburgh. So one of the things that we do at Pittsburgh Beautiful is we bring, Pittsburgh to the world. That's what we're trying to do. But there's a lot of expats that moved out of Pittsburgh during the decline of the steel industry,
right,
in the 70s, 80s, and even into the early 90s. And Phipps, it happens to be any picture of Phipps, any mention of Phipps, happens to be one of the most well-received post or article or video that we put up, and there's 200,000 followers, and wow. All over every age group from right. Younger people that follow all the way up to, you know, a little old lady who's 85 years old who remembers coming to Phipps, you know, as a child, mm-hmm. as you had mentioned.
Right.
So I think Phipps is probably one of the most special places in Pittsburgh, and I really mean that.
Well, it should be, because there's really nothing else like this anywhere else in the country. So, I mean, we're really lucky here in Pittsburgh to have a place like this, because it's a very rare, very rare to have something like this, as beautiful as this.
Yeah. So what do you see for the future here at Phipps from a historical standpoint? Where do you see or hope to see Phipps Conservatory, say, in the next 10, 15 years?
Well, I think we're still focused on that basic mission from 126 years ago, to connect people to nature, connect people to the beauty of plants. But we're now taking a little bit of a twist on that whole idea. You know, 126 years ago, people didn't think there was any limit to the amount of resources we could use or the amount of pollution we could produce. In fact, people thought we were going to conquer nature. Many of us today now realize that's not true. We're not going to be able to conquer nature, and we need to start figuring out how to live more in harmony with nature. So that's something that we're really focused on right now. We're doing it through plants. We're doing it through the beauty of nature. We've sort of reinvented a lot of our activities and programs. Our buildings, for example, are some of the greenest in the world. This building we're sitting in right now is probably the greenest building in the world. And it's still, even though it opened in 2012, it is still the only building in the world to have met the Living Building Challenge, which is the most rigorous green building standard in the world, LEED Platinum, WELL Platinum, and SITES Platinum, And it was the first Well Platinum and the first Seitz Platinum building in the world. So it's really pretty incredible, and we have it here in Pittsburgh.
So just so our listeners know, we're currently sitting in the conference room at the Center for Sustainable Landscapes.
Right.
Okay. Can you tell me what it means to be LEED certified and how it is that this building is considered the greenest building in the world?
Well, LEED is probably the most popular of all the green building standards that people know about right now. It's one of the first ones, and it's one that people got very excited about this idea of, you know, initially it was very much focused on reducing the amount of energy we use, reducing the amount of water we're using, all very important things, reducing the amount of pollution. But in 2006, the Living Building Challenge was announced, which goes way beyond LEED Platinum, and Platinum is their highest standard. And the Living Building Challenge is based on this idea of making buildings out of zero energy. They have to make more energy than they use from renewable resources produced on site. They have to capture and treat all their sanitary water and treat it on site, all their stormwater and treat it on site, which is very important in Pittsburgh, by the way. And there's a whole series of other things that they have to do, including something called the Red List, which this was the thing that really shocked me when we were building this building. Is the Red List is a list I think it's 21 different classes of chemical compounds that are toxic. And the scary thing is that they're found in a lot of building products. Well, and if you build a Living Building Challenge building, you're not allowed to have any of those products on the building. That's actually the hardest thing in building a Living Building Challenge. But we opened the Center for Sustainable Landscapes in December 2012, and it was, I think, the seventh building to get Living Building Challenge certified in the world. While we were through design and while we were through construction, we heard about something called the Seitz Initiative, which is like LEED for landscape. So how do you make the landscape around the building be very sustainable and green? We decided to pursue that, and we got Platinum certified for that program, and that's their highest certification. And this was the first one to get that. And then during construction, we heard about something else called WELL, and that was a new standard that came out that looks at how do buildings affect human health. You know, you think about it, you spend 90% of your lives in buildings. So what happens in the building has a lot of impact on on your health. Well, WELL sets these very high standards to make sure that there's no negative impact. There's lots of positive impact from buildings on human health. This building ended up being the first one ever to get WELL Platinum certified, which is their highest certification. And then it got all of these all in one building, which, like I said, nobody has ever done before.
I would have never thought that. I would always consider landscapes to be green. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure. They are.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're green. Yeah. But there's a lot of damage that can happen in a landscape during construction with compaction, killing of, you know, running trucks and things over the roots of trees, what you do with the soil and the landfill, how it's treated. So the whole Seitz program is designed to really make sure that you create landscapes that are healthy.
So this is kind of like post-construction or during,
it's,
even
it's
during construction?
Absolutely. Okay. It's during construction. Okay. During and post, right?
That's
processes. Afterwards.
That's interesting because I don't think you ever consider that. I mean, I'm not in the construction industry, but I've been around it, and I've seen buildings come and go. I would have never realized that there's, now that you think about it, of course, but the impact of the landscape afterwards and the cleanup and the fact that just cleaning up after you build a structure is probably not the healthiest thing for the area around it.
Right. You have, you know, heavy equipment coming in, compacting the soil. You have all the soil layers mixed up. There's a lot happens in construction. That's just not good for the landscape.
You mentioned something called the Red List that I had read about over here. Was there something on that list that surprised you? More about what building materials are on the Red List after this short break. You mentioned something called the Red List that I had read about over here. Was there something on that list that surprised you?
It wasn't so much that what was on the list surprised me. What surprised me was how hard it was to find products without it. For example, when we built this building, we wanted to have carpet in the building, and there was only one carpet in the entire country that was red list free. Now, lucky for us, yeah. It came in five different colors, so we had right. A little bit of a choice. But, I mean, that was kind of scary to think that there's only one carpet in the country that doesn't have toxic red list chemicals in it. We wanted to have nice new wooden doors in this building and all the office doors. We could not find a single door manufactured in the United States that didn't have formaldehyde in the glue. Mm. So we couldn't use any of those things. Now, I have to say, because more and more people have been starting to ask questions, manufacturers have been responding. There's a whole thing called the Declare program right now, where manufacturers can declare what's in their products and show if it's red list free. More and more manufacturers are stepping up to the plate and are being more transparent about what's in their products. And the good thing is now, you know, we're working on our third Living Building Challenge building right now. And there's so many more carpets and there's so many more products available now that are red list free than there were, you know, 7 years ago. So that's a really encouraging to see that change has started to happen.
Yeah. And Phipps has helped to spearhead that.
Absolutely. You know, we were one of the first places to start contacting these manufacturers and say, hey, what's in your product?
So the most recent building that was opened just a couple months ago, right? And that's the Exhibit Staging Center.
Right.
And that building focuses more on the employees and their health as they're working. And so tell me a little bit about the Exhibit Staging Center.
You know, I will, but I want to just step back for a second and say something more about this building because I think it's really important to your listeners. And, you know, when we decided to build the Center for Sustainable Landscapes, no one in the world had ever at that point actually built a Living Building Challenge building. And nobody even knew if it could be done. But we decided that we wanted to go for this challenge. And one of the things we said, you know, if we could build, we could probably become the greenest building in the world. It shouldn't just be about Phipps. It should be about Pittsburgh. So we decided, you know what? Instead of just, you know, trying to find the fanciest architect, you know, from New York or San Francisco or, you know, some other Europe or something like that, we decided when we were going to build this building that we were going to limit the primary architect and the primary engineer had to come from Pittsburgh. And that would give special consideration to any team that was either mostly Pittsburgh or mostly Pennsylvania-based. And we did that. We put together a team with the Design Alliance from Pittsburgh as our primary architect, CJL Engineering was our primary engineer. Because we wanted to show the world that we have incredible talent in Pittsburgh. We have talent. We have such incredible talent here that we could build the greenest building in the world before anybody else. And they did it. And we're really quite proud of that. And now, you know, now we're moving on to the Exhibit Staging Center. Again, we focused on, you know, local architects, local engineers, local design teams, because we don't have to go to New York or San Francisco or Seattle. We've got great talent here in Pittsburgh, and we want to show that to people.
I think that's coming full circle.
Right.
From what Pittsburgh was known as.
We used to be the innovators. We led the world in innovation. Well, we still are.
Yeah. And the innovation that we led the world in 100 years ago was not very clean. So we've come full circle now, and now we're becoming those innovators again.
Right.
And that was my point, is that, you know, the innovation, it is, I think, one of the wonderful things about Pittsburgh, and I'm not originally from Pittsburgh either, but one of the wonderful things about Pittsburgh is the people and how hardworking they are and how loyal they are, you know, to this city.
That is so true. Yeah.
And I mean, we've all been a lot of places in our lives, and you can say these types of things about just about anywhere you go. But it seems to be a much deeper tie.
Yeah.
You know,
something that I learned since I've been here, you can't tell someone from Pittsburgh, you can't do that.
I think you're right.
They're going to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah,
absolutely. So let's talk about the Exhibit Staging Center.
Sure.
That's the most recent addition. Why did Phipps feel it was important to build that particular
green building?
Well, there's like a step in between that. Right after we finished building this building, the Center for Sustainable Landscapes, we realized, you know, we needed more classroom space. And we decided that we were going to build a new little classroom for our kids' programs. And we started looking around, and we learned that a lot of times when school districts need additional classroom space, a lot of times they'll buy a modular. And we were horrified when we found that out, because when you think about it, modular buildings are some of the most toxic kinds of buildings you could build. They're off gas and all these chemicals. I don't know if you remember back when the Katrina hit New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
They were putting people in trailers, and it's in the papers every day, all the people are getting sick. Well, that's the kind of buildings they put kids in.
Hmm.
So this is terrible. So we looked around, and we found a modular classroom that could meet the living building challenge. And we decided we wanted to do that here to show people that you can build a modular building and it could be a healthy place for kids. And, you know, kids are some of the most vulnerable members in society, and we tend to put them in some of the worst buildings. We need to show people we need to put them in good buildings. So we put that modular building in, and that's almost fully certified right now. And then as we started getting around to the old public works building that existed on site, that was supposed to become our maintenance building. And initially we're like, okay, here's this ugly old cinder block building from the 60s, very inefficient, no windows. And we need this new exhibit staging center, a place to create all our exhibits and storage and, you know, offices for maintenance staff. And we decided, well, should we tear it down?
I can learn.
Should we tear it down or should we build something new? And the more we thought about it, we said, you know what? The greenest building is a building that already exists. Let's see if we could take this ugly old building and turn it into a beautiful space and turn it into one of the greenest buildings in the world. And if we did that, then we'd be able to show here on one site, on this lower campus behind Phipps, examples of three of the greenest buildings in the world, new construction and modular construction, and an existing building that was retrofit. And then we said, okay, we think we could do that. And then we said, you know who else usually gets crummy buildings to work in besides kids? Maintenance people. Well, let's make this be a WELL Platinum building too, the healthiest kind of building you could possibly build for our maintenance staff. So we decided to pursue WELL Platinum certification on it as well. And that's the building that we have now, a building that's it just opened a month ago. And we'll be pursuing now the Living Building Challenge, WELL Platinum, and LEED Platinum for that building.
Now, that used to be a public works building.
That's right.
How interesting is that? So
it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely transformed. I mean, yeah. If you have to see the before pictures to go like, really, is that? That was that.
Yeah, that's interesting, and the fact that you were able to, it's almost in a way, it's almost fate that you were able to say, we'll build something from scratch.
Right.
We'll take something that's kind of a prefab, you know, current construction type with the modular idea, and then take something that is old and been around for a while, and turn them all into these green buildings, these sustainable landscapes. I think it's pretty incredible.
Well, it is when you think about there's nowhere else in the world, I don't say in the world, where you can go and see these three examples in one place right next to each other.
Yeah, that's incredible. Now you mentioned that an existing building is the greenest building in the world. Or I'm sorry, an existing building is the greenest building. Why would you
say
it that way?
Because there's a lot of a lot of energy already went into making that building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all the carbon and that was given off to make all the concrete and all the the whole building was constructed already. So if you tear it down, all that pollution that was already produced is gone to waste now. I mean, there's nothing that's accounting for it. And if you tear that all down and start from scratch, you're creating all new pollution and carbon and everything else to create a new building. So it's better. You're better if you can take an existing building and just figure out how to make it greener. So it's a much better choice if you can do it. And the other reason we wanted to do that too was to show people, here in Pittsburgh, we have a lot of old building stock all around the city. And as people become more and more interested in creating a green building, we wanted to show them, hey, you know what? You don't necessarily have to tear that thing down. You can convert it into something that's super green and save all that embodied carbon.
Now, in doing this, in taking on this endeavor, I would imagine that a lot of other construction firms have been reaching out to you to say, how can we get involved? Or, you know, from a commercial standpoint, how much of that have you seen here in Pittsburgh? Because we seem to be going through a period of growth now. I mean, we're starting to see cranes around the city again. And I know there are some larger corporations in Pittsburgh that some of the buildings they're putting up, they're getting greener.
Right. So
how much of that have you seen on the commercial side of things?
Well, I think we're starting to see, definitely see a movement towards greener buildings here in Pittsburgh. And I think, you know, the mayor deserves a lot of credit for that. And, you know, we're just seeing more and more emphasis on green. Now, not every building is being created to meet the Living Building Standard. I mean, I'd love to see that happen someday, but we're not there right now. Although, you know, the Parks Conservancy did the Living Building Challenge building in Frick Park, mm-hmm. which is really a great thing to see. And I know down on the Hazelwood Green area, they're looking at building greener buildings. I would love to see a lot of these buildings actually go for the Living Building Challenge. But I think we're moving in that direction.
And do you think that this will lead to more innovation in residential construction as we go forward?
Absolutely. You know, the things that are in the Living Building Challenge are definitely applicable to residential. They're being adapted right now for, you know, low-income housing. I mean, it can cover a wide variety of different types of building formats. And it's important for all of them because, like I said earlier, we spend 90% of our lives in buildings. So the places where you live, you work, you learn, you play, these are all having an impact on your health and building healthier buildings, you know, particularly when you start thinking about kids, schools, daycare, any of these kind of places. We really need to be refocus the way we think about buildings and really start focusing on creating places that are better for people and better for the planet.
I think it is interesting nowadays that we're starting to look at, especially when it comes to children, you know, how does your environment affect you as you get older, and not just the environment around you that you experience, but the physical environment, the air you breathe, you know, the things that you see, the things that you touch, the toys that you play with.
There's huge impact. And I think we've just cracked the surface of really trying to understand, you know, is there any connection to things like autism and asthma or, you know, obesity, you know, cancer. I mean, there's all these diseases that we feel like there's an increase.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of this is attributed to the environment? I think there probably is a really strong connection.
So moving on here, do you have any everyday insights or tips for, you know, a guy like me? I live in a big house. I have a lot of kids. What are some things that I can do to make my everyday life greener that would be important to teach my children, you know, through example?
Well, I think the big thing is through example, and that's something that we try to do here at FIPS, which is why we, you know, put a lot of this forward in our programs and everything. But I think as a person, as an individual, or if you have a family, demonstrating these things is really critical. So things that you can do that are relatively easy, you could switch to renewable energy for your energy provider. In fact, we have a program here at FIPS now that if you switch electricity while you're visiting FIPS, you get a free one-year membership to FIPS. I think people can start looking at the kind of cars they drive, start driving more fuel-efficient cars, you know, cutting back on red meat. You know, production of meat produces a lot of greenhouse gases. One of the big things that we're focused on right now at FIPS is really trying to figure out how can we start cutting way back on the amount of single-use disposable plastic we use in this country. Since 2006, we have not had any plastic disposables in our cafe operations. In 2009, we got rid of bottled water because of the plastic. I think there's a lot more that we can do And I think that's a lot of things that homeowners or, you know, individuals, families could do. Start figuring out how to start cutting back on that plastic.
Yeah.
It's having a huge impact. That stuff doesn't go away.
Right.
It's going to be around for thousands of years. We've all heard stories about how it's affecting the aquatic life, turtles, fish, birds. There's really just no excuse for the amount of plastic we use anymore. We really need to start focusing on that.
Yeah, it's incredible. When you go to any of the shorelines in this country, if you think about, I'm in my late 40s, so you know, I remember going to the Eastern Shore to Ocean City, Maryland, and all up and down Delaware when I was younger. And now I take my children there, and it is markedly different.
It's littered with plastic.
It really is. My wife and I like to go down to Palm Beach a lot and spend time down there. Incredible the amount of plastic. I like to walk up and down the beach and look at seashells, and it's just incredible the amount of plastic that you see. And it's not something that you would ever consider was bad years ago, because
right.
It was this invention that made things, it was cheaper to make, and it was, you could store things in it for a long time, and it's just permeated every aspect of our lives.
Yeah. Well, we were led to believe, you know, you use it once and throw it away. The problem is there is no away.
Yeah.
You know, it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's going everywhere.
Yeah. That's incredible. Hopefully they'll find out how to recycle that
Well, I think we've also been led down the a dream path with that too. You know, we'll just recycle. Well, a lot of that stuff just ends up getting being burnt.
So Richard, I would really like to thank you for your time here. It's been incredibly educational. I'm very grateful that you sat down with me to talk about this.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be able to talk to your listeners too.
And I'm looking forward to coming down to Phipps quite a few more times this year.
Excellent.
And it's always a great place to take pictures. So maybe you can get me in one of these times to take some pictures.
Sounds good.
and again, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right.
To find out more about Phipps Conservatory and their leading efforts in green innovation, you can go to phippsconservatory.org. That's phippsconservatory.org. Stay real. Yet another reason that Pittsburgh is beautiful. Phipps Conservatory, many, many thanks. I really appreciate the time that Richard Piacentini took to sit down with me and talk about what's going on at Phipps, the green innovation that they are pioneering not only in this city but around the world. I think that we all should be very, very thankful that we have an organization and a facility like Phipps Conservatory within arm's length, a place to go, a place to make memories, a place to see beautiful things, and also what is most evident, a place where Pittsburghers come to accomplish something. And as he said in the interview, you can't tell a Pittsburgher that they can't do that, because they will. They will do it. So thanks again to Phipps Conservatory. Thank you, Mr. Piacentini, for your time. And I hope you all learned something. I certainly learned a lot. And it's going to make my visits to Phipps with my children and my family and my friends all the more meaningful. Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast. Stay real. The Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Chris Klein, the founder of Pittsburgh Beautiful. The opinions of our guests are not necessarily the opinions of Pittsburgh Beautiful and are their own opinions. All of our guests have been invited to be on the podcast and are not paid for their appearance. Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast. Stay real.